We're holding on page 62 in Psachim, the second line from the bottom, middle of Os Samach. Now, we started learning yesterday that when Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi was sick, then Rebbe sent him a message, please tell us a few of the veritlach from your father, Rabbi Yossi. So the first one had to do with challah, which is why we bring it in over here. The second one had to do with the nations bringing gifts from Mashiach, Lassad Lavai. And now is going to be the third one.
Two lines from the bottom?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
So, Amalei, so then he told him another one, or here's what we have in the printed Gemara, is Va'od Shalach Loi. He sent him another message, another vote from Rabbi Yossi. Shlosh Meis v'shishim v'chamisha shvakim yesh v'krach gadol shabarim. The great city of Rome has 365 marketplaces. Each one of those marketplaces has 365 towers in it. Each of those towers has 365 steps, or milus more likely means levels. Every individual level within those towers itself has enough food to sustain the whole world. So you're talking an enormous amount of gashmius that is there. You have do 365 cubed and then multiply that by the amount of food it would take to sustain the whole world. Why 365? Marsha points out, we know that the Goyim count their calendar by the sun. So therefore, everything involving the Goyim, in particular with Edom, has to do with the sun. So therefore, so 365 days in a solar year, therefore everything of theirs is going to be in multiples of 365. Similarly, there's a Gemara in Megillah that also talks about, it also mentions over there that there are 365 marketplaces in Rome, and it talks about the infrastructure that's there in terms of bathhouses, and also it uses the number 365 over and over again for the same reason. Omele Reb Shimon Berebi, so Reb Shimon Berebi asks him, Va'amilo Reb Shimon, or Yishmal Reb Yossi Lerebi, or others say Reb Yishmal Reb Yossi himself, asks Rebbe, Hani Laman, what is all this for? If you have even one floor of these towers is enough to feed the whole world, then what is all the rest of that wealth there? What is it for? Omele, so he answers, Loch olachavrach olachavre chavrach. It'll be for you and your colleagues and the colleagues of your colleagues, meaning for everybody who learns Torah. This is all wealth. This is all gashmiyistika wealth that Hashem is storing up for the tzaddikim. Shenemar, as we find psukim, regard now in context, these psukim are talking about the city of Tsur. The city of Tsur, where Hiram was the king, was a great commercial center in those days. It was like the Wall Street of the ancient world. All international trade went through there. So the Navi describes how it's going to be destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, and then eventually it's going to regain its glory. And he says that all of the trade and all of the wealth that it does, v'yasachra v'esnana, all the trade that flows through it, and all of its esnan literally means like the fee that a person pays to a zona in previous psukim. In fact, Yeshaya says that the Yutzer are going to be like an old forgotten zona that nobody remembers anymore, and you're going to be going and trying to attract new customers. So therefore he uses in a derogatory sense, like all of the wealth that passes through your hands is nothing more than like the fee for a zona. Anyway, he says all of that trade and all of those fees, Hodesh Lashem, will ultimately be holy for Hashem. Lo yit otzer, it won't be stored up in storehouses. Velo yit chosen, it won't be kept in treasuries, as the Gemara is going to define soon. Lo yit otzer and lo yit chosen. Ki la yoshvim lifnei Hashem yiyev goymer. Rather, it'll be for those who sit before Hashem. Now, the end of the pasuk goes. So now the Gemara is going to explain some of the phrases in that pasuk. What are they referring to? First of all, what is my loyot otzer? So what does the word loyot otzer mean, and how is it different than loyot chosin? So Tani Rabbi Yosef, loyot otzer is a base otzreisav. Loyot otzer means it won't be stored in the kind of storehouses where you store, for example, Rashbam says grain, wine, and oil. You don't need to keep those like under lock and key, like the way you would gold and silver or whatever, but you do need to keep them someplace where they'll be reasonably safe. So this, it won't even be stored away in storehouses. Rather, it'll be kept for the tzaddikim. And the loyich chosin is a base gnozer. And loyich chosin, which is meloshin chosin, which means strength, so that refers to the kind of place, the base gnozer, this refers to treasuries. where people store their treasures, where governments store their treasures, gold and silver, under lock and key, with armed guards, with the fortresses and so forth. So that won't be necessary to do any of that. Or rather, it won't be for these goyim of Tsur themselves to store up in their storehouses and their treasuries for themselves to use. And then the pasuk continues again, ki la yoshrim lifnei Hashem yisachra, all of the trade, all of the wealth generated by the trade of Tsur will be lechel, and here the Gemara is doubting it about Rome, because Marsha points out that Tsur is part of the Roman Empire. Eventually it became incorporated into the Roman Empire, and therefore the nevuah about it can refer to the Roman Empire as a whole. So the pasuk says all of its trade will be la'yoshim lifnei Hashem yisachra. All of its trade will be for those who sit before Hashem, lechol l'sava, to eat and be satisfied, v'lemachase osik, and for a covering of osik. Now the simple meaning of osik, my mafoshim on the pasuk explain, means like elegant or rich. You have, for example, you have the line in Tillim, you have the pasuk in Tillim, you have bir yidabru osik, which means that people speak like very proud words of how great they are. You have other similar expressions in Tanakh. Hoin osik, for example, means a tremendous wealth. So therefore, in the simple sense, machasa osik means beautiful, elegant clothing. But here the Gemara is going to douch in it differently. First of all, Maila Yoshvim Lifnei Hashem. Who are these ones who sit before Hashem? Amar Rav Elazar, Zeham Makir Mokim Chaveira Yeshiva. It refers to the person who recognizes his chaver's place in the yeshiva. Meaning, in other words, if you ask him, where does Pliny sit? He knows. Well, therefore, that means he's regularly there in the Beis Medrash. Otherwise, not if they had nameplates on the seats. So therefore, it means that he's regularly there, and he recognizes, so he's the kind of person who's going to enjoy this wealth. Marsha points out another thing as well. You know, we have in Pirkei Avos, when you have the Midas, Shatur, and Nichnes Behem, the 48 things, one of them is Hamakiris Mekoimoi. So now we're saying that not only he knows his own place, but he also knows his friend's place. That's like Yoshvim in plural. Second of all, he says also Hamakir Makoim Chaveroi can also mean not just that he knows the physical place where his chaver sits, but also that he knows what level he's holding on in learning and in Yiras Shemayim and so forth. So again, that means that he's there all the time and comes to know all his chaverim. To a certain extent, those two things really, at least in the yeshivas in those days, there was a certain connection between those two things anyway. People were seated in the yeshiva in accordance with their greatness in Torah and their greatness in Yiras Shemayim. So the senior Talmidim sat closer to the front, and the junior Talmidim and so forth closer to the back. So to a certain extent, if a person is makrim or prem chaveroi, then it means he also has some idea of his caliber. Marsha points out, by the way, that we're not necessarily saying, let's say, in shul. It's true that people have a makom kavua in shul, but we're not necessarily talking about that. Rather, we're talking about that he knows his friend's makom kavua in the Beis Medrash. With that said, and it's worth telling an interesting little maisala involving the Noda B'Yehuda. In his times, the story goes, there was a woman in Prague, a young lady whose husband disappeared, and she's left in Aguna for many years, and then a man comes to town looking very much like her husband and claiming that he is him. So meanwhile, the father-in-law is not so sure, and then whatever. In the end, so they go to the Noda B'Yehuda's base.
How much time passed by?
Doesn't matter how much time passed, whatever, enough time that now there's this question whether it really is him or not. On the one, he seems to be very familiar with everything about the husband. On the other hand, there's something about him that seems a little off. So the Noda B'Yehuda, so they go to the Noda B'Yehuda. The Noda B'Yehuda tells the father-in-law in privacy, he tells him, take this fellow to the Beis Medrash and you'll see what happens. Or now he doesn't tell him, take him himself. Somebody, have somebody in your family, take him to the Beis Medrash. Or to the shul, not to the Beis Medrash, to the shul rather. Pitzer Amaisa, the guy, he would want to sit next to his father-in-law, but he has no idea where his father-in-law is. Supposed father-in-law's place in shul isn't shul, because a guy like that is such a low-down guy who's ready to be with an Eishes Ish and so forth, is an imposter. Of all the things he thinks, he finds out everything he can about this person whose place he's trying to claim. The one thing that doesn't occur to him to think about, and the Noda B'Yehuda realizes this, is to think where his father-in-law sits in shul, because that's something of Kedusha, and a guy like that is not going to have that on his mind, and that's why he was exposed as an imposter. Okay, getting back to the Gemara. So that's the Layosh from Lifnei Hashem, the people who regularly sit in the Beis Medrash so much that they know their friend's place, both their actual seat as well as their caliber. Ikad Amri, Amar Rav Elazar, Zama Kabel Pnei Chaveri B'Yeshiva. Another version is where he welcomes his friend in the yeshiva, which can mean he welcomes him. In other words, that you have, again, Marshal refers to that Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, where we have the Dibuk Chaverim and Noisa Ba'olam Chaverov, where in Chaveroi, so a person is close with Chaverim in the Beis Medrash and friendly with them, and he bears the burden with them and helps them in their learning. It also means, so that in that sense, Makabal Pnei Chaveroi, that he's friendly and generous towards the other Tamar Chachamim in the Beis Medrash. The other point, as Marashah says, it can also mean in a simple sense, he's there to greet them first because he's earlier in the Beis Medrash than they are. In any case, that's another meaning of Layosh from Lifnei Hashem. And my v'lamachasa osik, and those last words in the pasuk for a covering of osik, what does that mean? Zamachasa dvorim shekisa atik yoymaya. So here the Gemara is doubting the word osik as related to the word atik, like the name for Hashem, and say for Daniel, atik yoymin, which we're familiar with throughout Chassidus, where we're talking about arif and atik. So here it means the things that the Ancient of Days, that Hashem concealed. So in other words, when you have a person who properly conceals the things that Hashem said to conceal, Umayninu Sisrei Torah, that refers to the secrets of Torah. Maisa Merkava, Maisa Bereshis to a certain extent. We actually just had, Marshal refers to something that we just had in Daf Yomi, that another example of that is the secrets of Hashem's name, the shame Ben Arba, Yudke Vavke, the name of Hashem of 12 letters, the name of Hashem of 42 letters, where the two Chachamim would give these secrets over to their Talmidim only once every 7 years. So that kind of thing, when a person knows to conceal these secrets, which Hashem wanted concealed, then he's the kind of person we're talking about who is destined to enjoy all that wealth of Sur and of Rome. Nowadays, of course, we have anyway mitzvah mutter, mitzvah legalis, there's a chachma, but in the time of the Gemara, and even much later, even in the time of the Rambam, all of that had to be kept very much under wraps. Ikadamri, another version is, zamagaladvorim shakisa atik yemaya. On the contrary, the pasuk can also be referring to somebody who reveals things that Hashem concealed, not that Hashem wants concealed, but things that Hashem concealed and left it up to us to discover, o my ninhu taimei Torah. Namely, the reasons behind mitzvahs. Now, Marashah points out that you do have the Gemara elsewhere explains that Hashem doesn't give the reasons for most mitzvahs, because we see, for example, Shlomo HaMelech thought, well, if the reasons don't apply to me, neither does the mitzvah, and he was nichshol. But here we're talking about things where the Torah itself does not give a reason, so even if the Chachamim discover a reason, that's not going to lead to a nichshol. Also, Marashah says there may be a difference between different degrees of Taimei HaTorah. Taimei HaTorah over here, elaborate what it means, but in other words, Taimei HaTorah might be the explanations, the kind of thing that the Gemara does all the time. For example, where do we know this particular din from? From what pasuk or from what limud chatur and dreshes ban or whatever, whereas there it's talking about the actual reasons for mitzvahs. This actually ties in with something in today's Tanya, where the Alpha Deva talks about the idea that why is it that Torah is associated with Eitz, Nigla is associated with Eitz Adas Tov Bara, whereas Zohar, another Pnimius HaTorah, is connected with Eitz HaChayim, is because you have everything in Nigla. You have to dig it out from among the questions, and you have to quest for it, and you have to delve for it and whatever, and extract it from the clippers that are hiding it and reveal those Taimei HaTorah. So therefore, so that ties in directly with what we're saying over here in this Gemara, that a person who does that is that L'machasa Osik. He's the one who's revealing the things that Hashem put in the world in a concealed way, and he's going and extracting those and extracting that, those sparks of Kedusha, and revealing the reason, the ideas behind that mitzvah, and then bringing it to a higher level. Avraham Avinu did both of these things. I mean, that he brings down, of course, into the world, and then she explains to people why they should believe in Hashem, and on the other hand, he keeps secret the secrets of Torah. Continues the Gemara. Now that we mentioned some things from Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi, so the Gemara mentions another Durasha from him, or a couple of other Durashas from him. Omer of Kahana Mishum Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi. Now, earlier we learned, when we started talking a few days ago about Tillim, about Sefer Tillim, the Gemara had mentioned that there are 10 levels of, there are 10 types of praise of Hashem that are used in the captions of Tillim. And among them was Nitzuah, because you have a lot of Tzapitlach whose caption begins Lamnatseach. But then, so why Lamnatseach Mizmor LeDavid? The question is, why Lamnatseach rather than Lenoitseach, to the victor? Now, on the simple level, Mephoshim explained Lamnatseach means the conductor, so it's meant for the conductor of the orchestra of the Levium and the Bais Mikdash to sing together with the choir over there. But the Gemara is darshining, since we said before that it's a way of praising Hashem. So why Lamnatseach, which suggests the one who makes victory possible? Netzeach would mean the actual victor himself. Menetzeach means the one who makes victory possible. The Rif points out over here, part of the question is why Lamnatseach is followed by Mizmor, which means a song. Why is a song appropriate after that? So it means Zamru Lamishanitz Chenotz Chen Osef Sameach means this is, we should sing in honor of Hashem, who he is, we overpower him, so to speak, and he is happy about it. Meaning that Marashah says actually, so why Lamnatseach and then Mizmor? If Mizmor, why Lamnatseach and whatever, that's why, because Hashem, so to speak, we overpower him and he's happy. Meaning, so come see, the way Hashem does things is not like the way Boss of Adam does. Midas Boss of Adam notes of Otziv. And a Boss of Adam, if he's beaten in a contest of whatever kind, he's upset. But Hashem, we so to speak, overpower him and he's happy. We find that after the Chet Egel and the Meraglim and so forth, Hashem was ready to destroy the Jewish people. Lule Moshe Bechira Begomer, were it not for Moshe, his chosen one. So why does the Torah, why does the Pasuk use the word Bechira over there? We know who Moshe was. It means that Hashem chooses him for the fact, Hashem is happy with the fact that Moshe, so to speak, overcame him and said to Hashem, don't do that. And Hashem, so to speak, gave in. Yeah, that's what we're saying. That when we're in particular, yeah, Moshe being the greatest example of that. That yeah, we overcome Hashem. What Hashem has planned, and we so to speak overcome that, and Hashem is happy with that. That's why we call him Bechiroi, that Hashem chose him precisely for that reason, because Hashem is very happy with him for doing that. So that's Minatseach, that Hashem makes it possible for us to be victorious over him. For example, by Moshe, you have in fact where Hashem hinted to Moshe, Va'ata Hanicha Li, Hashem says, leave me alone and I'll destroy them. And Moshe took that as the hint that he should not leave Hashem alone and petition for the Jewish people. So Hashem makes it possible for us to overcome him, and Hashem is happy when we take that opportunity and do so.
How come he's not overcome with all these millions of Yidden praying for Mashiach and Gula? That doesn't seem to overcome.
That's another question. It's a question. Yeah. Okay, yeah. But Amr of Kahana Mishumer Bishma Rab Yosi, but Abon and Amri Mishumer Shimon Lakish Mishum Yehuda Nesia. So Rab Kahana says this following vote in the name of Rabbi Shmuel Rab Yosi. The other Chachamim say it over in the name of Rish Lakish, who said it in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Nesia. Anyway, my dichtiv in the description of the Kruvim that Yechezkel has at the beginning of his sefer, so he says the day Adam Mitachas Kanfeim. So he describes those human hands under their wings. So simple meaning means exactly that. The Chayis HaKodesh, they have wings, as he describes over there, and they have, concealed by the wings, are hands. But Yodoyksiv, you have a Kriyoksiv over there, where the word is written, the Yodoy, Adam Mitachas Kanfeim. Yodoy means his hand. So what does that mean? Zay Yodoy Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This refers to Hashem's hand, and so to speak, Maharshal says, his right hand, which is the side of Rachmim, the side of Chesed, it's spread out under the wings of the Chayas to have a Kabbal Bale Tshuva, in order to accept Bale Tshuva. And why does Hashem, so to speak, have to conceal it under the wings of the Chayas? Because otherwise the Midas Hadin is arguing, why should this person be given a chance? But Hashem, so to speak, overrules that and then hides his hand behind the Kanfei HaKruvim in order to accept the Bale Tshuva. So therefore the Kriyoksim. Anaf Yosef points out we have the rare example of Menashe, who had done so badly that even just Hashem, so to speak, sticking out his hand was not enough. And the Gemara brings over there another kriyuksiv in Divrei Hayomim, that Hashem had to, so to speak, make a tunnel in Shemayim for Menashe's tshuva to sneak in, because otherwise the Malachim are going to block it. But under ordinary circumstances, it's enough for Hashem to stretch out his hand, but Hashem does that despite the Midas Adin arguing that why should the person be given that opportunity.
How can the Lachem Balak when Hashem has the final say in everything?
Well, what we mean is, in other words, Hashem himself created forces in the world. And we know, you know, it says in Pirkei Avos, a person does one Avera, then Kohen like Tatei Verefon. So that force itself that Hashem created in the world, that itself, it feeds powers of evil, and it makes it that according to the rules that Hashem himself set up for the world, it ought to be by rights, a person does an Avera, all the flow of Ashpata from Hashem ought to be shut off. But Hashem, so to speak, overrides that and goes beyond his own rules. That's what we mean over here by he bypasses the malachim. It means, in other words, that Hashem goes beyond the rules that he himself set up in the world in order to accept Baalei Teshuva. Okay. Further on, the Gemara talks about, so we've been talking about the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, and then the whole topic of Yitzias Mitzrayim. So now that brings the Gemara to the following piece. Omer of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Kol Kesef Vezav Shema Olam Yosef Likdei Ve'Avila Mitzrayim. During the famine in Mitzrayim, Yosef gathered all the gold and silver that was in the world and brought it to Mitzrayim. Shenema, as the passage says, Vayilaket Yosef as Kol Kesef Hanin Tzaberet Mitzrayim. He gathered all the money that was in Mitzrayim. Now, Ein Li Ela Shav Eretz Mitzrayim. So from that pasuk, we'd only know that it was the money in Mitzrayim. Shav Eretz Kanan and Mishar Arotz Minayim. How do we know it was also all the money in Kanan and every place else? Talmud Lomah V'Chol Oretz Bo Mitzrayim. The pasuk says all the world came to Mitzrayim. Meaning, Marsha points out, if you only had that pasuk, then you would say, okay, Ha'oretz means the land of Mitzrayim. But once it says Vayechzak Harav the Eretz Mitzrayim, and then it continues V'chol Ha'oretz Bo Mitzrayim, we're meant to understand it not only that one land of Mitzrayim, but all the other lands. Oretz means the world in general. So everybody from all the entire known world was coming to Mitzrayim. Now, the pasuk does mention when it, at the end of Parashas Vayigash, when it talks about how Yosef gathered all that money, by lack of Yosef is called Kesef, it says whatever Eretz Mitzrayim over Eretz Kanan. Now, on the face of it, that means only those two countries. Marsha says no, it does mean, as the Gemara is saying here, all the other countries. The pasuk is focusing on Eretz Mitzrayim and Eretz Kanan because those are where events are occurring that are relevant to the Torah story. Eretz Mitzrayim, because then the result was that Yosef purchased all the land of Mitzrayim and all the Mitzrayim themselves and made them serfs to Pare, as it describes over there in the Pesukim, and Eretz Kanan because his family was there and eventually they came to Mitzrayim with their money to buy grain. But it was in other countries as well, just the Torah is not mentioning it because it's not relevant for the story. But in fact, it was all the countries. So now when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, they took all that wealth with them. As the pasuk says, they emptied out Mitzrayim. So what's the word vayinatzlu? Amr of Shimon Lakish or Ravasi, asa'ur kimitzula zu she'in badogim. They made it like the depths of the sea where there are no fish. The word vayinatzlu, we're darshaning as maloshin mitzula. Ravasi over Rav Shimon Lakish, amr kimitzuda she'in badogim. Another way of looking at it is they made it like a trap, like a net in which there's no grain. Meaning, Rashbam explains, how do hunters, if they want to trap birds, what do? They spread out a net. Now, the net by itself, no birds are going to be attracted to it. So they spread out grain over there, and then birds come to try and eat the grain, and they get trapped. So it's like that. How do we get the word mitzudah from vayinatzlu? So Tosfos points out, you have, after all, the letters dalad and the letters dalad and lamed can interchange because they're both letters that are formed in the same way with your tongue pressing against the back of your teeth. So you have that they all come from one motzah peh. Therefore, the word vayinatzlu can be darshan as if it was vayinatzdu meloshin mitzudah. Even Yaakov points out over here that also you have on one way of looking at it is that one of the great natural resources of Mitzrayim was the fish, and therefore that's one way is we're comparing that Mitzrayim was emptied like the depths of the sea that are empty of fish, and then the one about the grain is because the word Mitzuda, besides meaning a net, can also mean a fortress like Mitzudas David. So Mitzudas Tia, and so in other words, that they have no fortresses, they have no strength because they're empty of their grain. Now it means the Gashmiyistik of wealth they took out of them from Mitzrayim with them out of Mitzrayim means the Ruchniyistik of wealth. You have the famous thing that's brought all over the place in Siddur, that out of 288 sparks of Yusha in the world, 202 of them were in Mitzrayim, and they extracted all of them and took it all out. So they left. So Mitzrayim was left with no Gashmiyistik or Ruchniyistik of wealth. One interesting explanation about why the two different metaphors over here, besides what we said from Yom Yaakov, is a net. If it's empty of grain, it's usually not empty 100%. There's grain, and a grain here, a grain there, stuck in the crevices and all. As opposed to the bottom of the ocean, there's no fish at all. So the first understanding says they absolutely, completely emptied Mitzrayim of every trace of wealth. The second one is maybe not every little bit. Maybe there's little pockets of wealth left here and there.
What does it mean that there's no fish at the bottom of the ocean? There's something called bottom feeders. Those are the ones that are down there.
Yes, but if you go all the way, 7 miles deep, however deep the deepest part of the ocean is, you'll find certain kinds of creatures over there, but not fish. And there are some bodies of water, the Mediterranean in particular, that don't have any living things growing at the lower levels because there's not enough oxygen over there.
So when expression bottom feeder.
I understand, but it depends what kind of body of water we're talking about. Yeah, there's a difference between lakes and rivers. There's a difference between different bodies of water. Next. That treasure then remained by the Jewish people until the time of Rechavam, the son of Shlomo. Then, at that point, now, Sukkim describe how in Rechavam's times they were worshipping Avodah Zorah and doing other Averas. So, Bosh Shishak, Melech Mitzrayim, Al Yerushalayim, so Shishak, the king of Mitzrayim, came and attacked Yerushalayim, the Noklan Merechavam, and the result is he took that treasure away from Rechavam. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, by Hibashona Hamishas Hamalach Rechavam, in the fifth year of Rechavam, so 5 years after Shlomo had passed away, Ola Shishak Malach Mitzrayim al Yerushalayim, Shishak came and attacked Yerushalayim, by Yikach as Otsvis Beis Hashem as Otsvis Beis Hamalach, he took the treasures of the house of Hashem, of the Beis Hamikdash, and the treasures of the royal palace, the Efakol Lokach. He took everything, so we're meant to understand that everything includes the wealth from Mitzrayim from hundreds of years earlier. Including also he took all the golden shields that Shlomo had made. Sukkim described earlier that Shlomo made golden shields for his honor guard, so now Shishak took those as well. Interestingly, by the way, Sukkim meant go on to say that Rechavam had ones made out of copper instead, and they would carry them in front of him from then on. Mephoshim explained that he did that as a form of tshuva. Every time he's going out on a royal procession, and he's seeing that his honor guard is carrying only copper shields instead of the golden ones they had before, it should remind him, look what happened because of our Avedas, and it'll motivate him to be in a state of tshuva. In fact, earlier in the Masechta, we said that there are some things that went back to their original homeland, and one of them is the wealth of Mitzrayim. We say the Jewish people that came from Babel, Abraham came from Ur Kasdim, and they wound up back in Babel the same way this treasure came out of Mitzrayim and wound up back in Mitzrayim. But that wasn't the end of it. Buz Zerach, Melech Kush, Vinotlan Shishak Melech Mitzrayim. At some point, Zerach, the king of Kush, went and took it away from Shishak. Now, Rashi and Rashbam point out, we don't have anything in the Psukim implying that. This was a Kabbalah that the Gemara had, that Shmuel has, that at some point Zerah fought against Shishak and took it from him. What we do know next is in the Psukim, Bo'osev Notlam Zerah Kush. Osa came and took it from Zerah Melech Kush. The Psukim in Divrei Hayomim described how when Osa was king, Osa was Rechavam's grandson. So during the time when he was king, an enormous army led by Zerah HaKushi came and invaded Eretz Yisrael with a million soldiers, and they were very afraid, and they dived into Hashem. The Kitzur Hashem made a tremendous victory, and they beat the Kushim and took tremendous amount of spoils from them. Rashbam points out the minhag in those days was when kings went to war, they would take along their treasures with them to motivate their soldiers, and then afterwards they would disperse it to the soldiers if they were victorious. So now, if the other side is victorious, then they're able to take all those spoils. We know, we're familiar with this from the Maimon Basi Lagani, where the Friedrich Rebbe talks about that idea, and that Rebbe talked about it in many Maimorim over the years, based on that, how Hashem, so to speak, also freely spends his treasures of Ruchniistic power to give us the opportunity to do our avoid. Anyway, the point is that therefore this is how. So how does Osir come to get it from Zerach Melech Kush? He's not going all the way to Kush because Zerach brought it with him. Next, v'shigrei lahadrimon ben tavrimon. However, then Osir sent it to Hadrimon ben Tavrimon, who is also known as Ben Hadad. What happened was, this we also have in the Psukim, briefly in Malachim, and with a little more detail in Divrei Yomim, at the time, when Osa was king of Yehuda, the contemporary king of Malchus Yisrael, the Ten Shvatim, was named Baasha. At one point, this Baasha started making offensive moves against Malchus Yehuda. He started building fortresses and things in order to hem in Yehuda. And so Osa is worried about it. They might invade and we're not going to be able to defend ourselves. So he sends a message to Ben-Hadad, or the Gemara calls him over here Hadrimon, and tells him that, I know you have a peace treaty with Baasha, and you have an alliance with Baasha. Instead, I'm sending you a huge bribe. Instead, break your treaty with him, be allied with me instead, go attack him, and that way that'll ease the pressure off me. And sure enough, that's what happened. He goes and attacks cities in the north of Eretz Yisrael, and Baasha has to quickly withdraw his army from the south and redeploy them to deal with that threat in the north. By the way, the Pesukim can go on to say that a Navi came to Asa and told him you made a big mistake for doing that. He tells him, if you had bitachon in Hashem, like the way you had 2 years earlier in the matter with Zerah, Hashem would have caused, not only you would have defeated Baasha, you would have defeated Aram as well. And Rashi brings earlier in Sefer Melachim, in fact, the original thing was supposed to be that the kingdoms, Malchus Yehuda and Malchus Yisrael, should be split for only 36 years. It was supposed to be that because Shlomo was married to Bas Pare for 36 years, so it was supposed to be after 36 years of split, they would have reunited. This happened in the 35th year, 1 year before that. So if Asa had done the right thing, then the following year, Hashem would have made that Baasha's kingdom fall, and he would have conquered it, and he also would have defeated Aram, and they never would have been a menace to the Jewish people again. As it was, the kingdoms remained separate. Aram continued to harass them and sometimes come close to destroying them for the next 100 years, and yeah. Anyway, so now we're saying, in keeping with that, is Asa took this treasure and sent it to this Hadrimon as his bride. Eventually, the people of Ammon came and captured it from Hadrimon. Again, that doesn't say anywhere in Pesukim, but Shmuel had the Kabbalah that that's how it was. Bo Yehoshaphat for Nathan Bnei Ammon. The next one was Yehoshaphat, and the Jewish people got it back from Bnei Ammon. The Pesukim described in Divrei Hayomim how Ammon and a huge coalition of other nations invaded Eretz Yisrael, and again Yehoshaphat is very nervous about it, even though he has a large army, as it says in the Pesukim. He didn't think that it was a match for them. They daven to Hashem, the half a pasuk that we say in Tachnun Vanachnun Leneda Manasseh Kiolach Einenu comes from their tefillah at the time. Hashem tells him, a Navi comes and tells them, Hashem is going to make a great nest, and they're all going to be defeated. And sure enough, and they're spending, the pasuk goes on to say, they spent 3 days plundering the battlefield. So now, again, on the battlefield, there was this treasure that had been going through all these hands back and forth. So now Yehoshaphat got it from Bnei Ammon. Vayamunach ad Ochaz, now it remained with the Jewish people until Ochaz, for about another 150 years. Eventually, Sancheirev came and took it from Ochaz. In Ochaz's time, you had the kingdom of the Aseret HaShvatim under their king Petach is threatening the kingdom of Yehuda, and so is the kingdom of Aram also. And in fact, at one point, they joined forces, and Ochaz was a Rosh, and he didn't believe in Hashem. He didn't believe in Yeshaya, who told him in Hashem's name that don't worry, they're not going to be able to harm you. So instead, he sends a bribe to Sancheirev. Actually, the Pesuk calls him Tiglath Pileser and asks him to please come in on his side. So that's this treasure that now went to Tiglath Pileser, which is another name the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin is another name for Sancheirev. Eventually, in the next generation, Sancheirev invaded Yehuda and conquered many of the cities and came close to conquering Yerushalayim until his army was wiped out in the one night there by the Malach. So now, Chizkiyah got it back from Sancheirev. Now it remained by the Jewish people for the next 100 years until Tzidkiyahu's times. Eventually, Bo Kastiyim and Aplum and Tzidkiyahu. The Kastiyim came, Nebuchadnezzar and his army came and conquered Eretz Yisrael and took it away from Tzidkiyahu at the time of the Churban. Eventually the Persians defeated and destroyed the Babylonian Empire, and they took it from them. Bo Yavonim and Athlum and Parasim. Then later on, Alexander the Great and the Greeks came and took it from the Persians. Bo Romium and Athlum and Yavonim. Eventually the Romans conquered the Greek Empire and got it from them. Vadain Munach Beromi, that treasure is still located in Rome to this very day, as far as saying. So all that treasure that originally came from Mitzrayim went through all these vicissitudes, and now it's in Rome, and as we said before, it's now reserved for the tzaddikim and loss of love. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGola, Tess Rezhvin. So by the Chanukah Sabbeis HaMikdash HaShlishi, which we learned the other day, that's going to take place in particular during Cheshvan, and that is, after all, going to be the Mikdash Adnai Koninu Yodecha, the one that's built, so to speak, by Hashem's own hands, then at that point, we'll have the gilui of what it says in the Pasuk, B'chol Mokom Asher Azki Yashmi Ovei Alecha Ovei Rachticha, which we say at the end of the Aseret Sedivris, that throughout the world, B'chol Mokom, literally, where Hashem allows His name to be mentioned, will come to us and bless us. Meaning, the perfection of the Bis Mikdash, where we know that only in the Bis Mikdash do the Kohenim have the ability to use the Shema Mefurash in when they do it. That perfection will be revealed and will penetrate the entire world, as the Gemara says, Vayemahu Yi Hashem Echad Shmei Echad, and we learned earlier in our Masechta, Kashem Shani Nichtev Tachani Nikra. It means that then, well, Osid Lavi, the same way as Hashem's name is written, it's how it will be pronounced, because the entire world will be a Dira Lo Yisparach of the caliber of the Mishkan and the Bis Mikdash. Continuing with halachas of what, when, under what circumstances you're allowed to have a goy do work for you on Shabbos versus not. So, yesterday we mentioned a point that one of the criteria is that the work he's doing for you can't be in something mechobel a character, like building or fixing a house or doing farm or field work or trimming bushes or things like that. With the exception, we said, if it's far away from the city where there's no Jews living within a Tum Shabbos of it. Now, for example, if Goyim build a house on Shabbos for a Jew in a way that was also, then it's better to be machmir, not to go into it, not to even go into that house, although there are various details of dinim of that are described further in Shulchan Aruch.